Okay, so I'm going to talk about the PMSSM. The P stands for Phenomenological. And this is a series of recent papers that we've done at SLAC. The students on this work are Matthew Cahill Rowley and Ahmed Ismail. Ahmed's an outstanding phenomenologist on the job market this year. Take a look at his file. As well as myself, Tom, and Stefan Hosha. So there's been a lot of work on the PMSSM in the last few years, and this is just the obligatory slide with all the references that I could sit down and find. I probably missed some, but there's the SLAC group, the Cambridge group, the, well, I'm going to call the CMS group, the CERN group, the ATLAS group, and the Fermilab Chicago group. So it's a lot of work on this. And it all began back in 2008, so this is fairly new. So what is the PMSSM? We started working on this as an intermediary between the full MSSM with its 100 plus parameters and the constrained MSSM with its 4 parameters plus a sign. And we started working on this because we wanted some sort of middle ground in order to make sure that all of the parameter space of signatures was being explored. So our worry before the LHC started was that there would be some signature that Susie could give you that was not being adequately searched for by the experiments because they really concentrated on the constrained MSSM. So we sat down and made just a set of very general assumptions that are basically data-driven and have as little theoretical assumptions or prejudice as possible. So we just took the most general CP conserving MSSM and assumed R parity conservation. We assumed minimal flavor violation. The first two spermion generations are degenerate and have negligible Yukawa. So this is basically for consistency with meson-anti-meson mixing and other heavy flavor measurements. So this is a data-driven assumption. And absolutely no theoretical assumptions at the high scale, no assumptions about guts or Susie breaking. And so when you make these assumptions, what you're left with is 19 or 20 real weak scale parameters. The 19 or 20 depends upon what your assumption for LSP is. If you have models with a Gravitino LSP, then you have an extra parameter in here. So there's 10 scalar parameters. Again, the first two generations are degenerate, but the third generation parameters are separate. Three parameters in the Gaugino sector, three for trilinear couplings. Again, just the third generation trilinear couplings are assumed to be non-negligible. Higgs-Higgsino sector, three parameters. And again, if you have a Gravitino LSP, then you have this extra parameter for its mass. What we do is that we perform a scan over these parameters. We're now only working with linear priors. At the first, we compared scans with linear and logarithmic priors and showed that basically the results did not depend upon that, which is good, as it shouldn't. And so now we just scan with linear priors, and these are the parameter ranges that we take. The lower limits for the parameter ranges are basically set by previous collider experiments, Tevatron and LEP. And the upper ranges we just arbitrarily took to be 4 TeV so that we would have some models that would still be good for the next LHC run at 13 or 14 TeV. Okay. Everybody is linear again, except for when we have the Gravitino LSP, which we take this guy on a log prior because he has just such an enormous possible ranges of masses between an EV and a GEV. Oh, yeah, this is a TEV. Sorry. Yeah, that's important. Okay. So we do 3 million, we throw 3 million points randomly at this. We subject these to a series of constraints, which I'll say more about in the next slide. But basically, it's everything you can think of from flavor physics, precision electroweak, collider searches, and cosmology. And after that, we have about 225,000 models that survive for each LSP type. So whether you have a Gravitino LSP or a Neutralino LSP, we have a model set with roughly 225,000 models, or roughly 500,000 models overall. Yeah, yeah. So Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. You get an NLSP, right, that.
You can do an all of Jonathan Frey.
Exactly.
But you assume you get the correct.
So we only take that as an upper limit.
Oh.
Okay, in both model sets. As an upper limit, right. So we allow for axions or whatever else, yeah. And this, again, was to not have so much prejudice, right? So to allow for the dark sector to be richer than just one candidate particle. If you want a set of models that saturates WMAP, we have a subset of our models that saturate WMAP and account for all of it. We have models that don't account for all of it. We actually did, well, I'll say in a minute, we were very careful with the cosmology in the Gravitino case because BBN has a large effect there. So in the constraints, we've got the row parameter, W mass, rare B decays, G minus 2. We took a very wide swath of region for G minus 2. The invisible width of the Z, more flavor physics, B sub S to mu mu keeps changing. Direct detection of dark matter. And again, we take the relic density only as an upper bound. All the direct searches from LEP and the Tevatron, stable particle searches from the LHC are very important. For the Gravitino case, BBN is a very important constraint, along with relic neutrinos and diffuse photons. And then some theoretical considerations that you have a stable vacua and no tachyons or color charge breaking minimum. So those are the constraints that we subject our model to. And again, just to emphasize, all of our 500,000 models are consistent with all of this. Okay. So for the neutralino model set, this is the electroweak content of the LSP. And you see that most of our models tend to be, where are we here? Tend to be mostly weino or mostly higgsino. We have a very few set where the LSP is mostly abino, whereas the Gravitino case is mostly evenly split between the three. That's coming. So when we very first, we have different levels of how we subject our models to the constraints, okay? And these are the ones that we subject to at the very beginning. And then as each LHC search comes online, it gets applied to our set. And I'm going to be talking more about that in a few minutes. Yeah.
As far as stable vacuum goes,
yeah.
Do you mean absolute stability or just metastability?
I think just metastability. These guys don't cut out very many of the models. It's not such a big deal. Okay, so the... Oh, as I said, that's just completely arbitrary. All right, we just wanted to have some models that would still be relevant for the 13 TeV LHC. We're not covering NEMA's case, no. No, we're not going up to the 10 TeV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The upper bound for 1 TeV.
Yeah.
Okay, because we wanted to use those for the first initial run of LAC. And I think 99.9% of those were 10. Okay, so having learned from that lesson, we decided that we push that number up sufficiently so we can live with these models for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's for TeV. What's wrong direction? So, yeah. So definitely not NEMA scenario, right? I mean, everybody's at 4 TeV, except for the Gravitino. Stuck at 1 TeV. Okay. So the identity of the NLSP is very important, as we know, since it's a particle at the end of, or next to the end in all the cascade decay chains. So signatures at the LHC are very dependent upon this. For our neutralino set, this is the distribution. You probably, it's very difficult to read these. These are the different types of sparticles, which can be the NLSP. So the most, by far, the most favorite guy is the lightest chargino. And then the next favorite is the second lightest neutralino. And then everybody else is just sort of equal here. And just to let you know, it really is everybody else. We've got the Galeno, the lightest bottom, the lightest stop, the left-handed up, right-handed down, and then the selectrons and the neutrinos. So basically, everybody takes their turn at being the NLSP. For the Gravitino case, it's the same set of sparticles on the bottom, order slightly different, but the thing that's striking difference between these two sets of models is that it's basically flat. Okay, so the lightest neutralino is the favorite NLSP, but after that, everybody basically has kind of equal probability of being the NLSP. Okay, so now we get to the Atlas-SUSY searches. We follow the Atlas searches very carefully. We picked Atlas simply because, well, because they're better now. We picked Atlas simply because they're down the hall from us at Slack. There's really no other reason. And what we do is we apply the general AMET-based searches to our model sets. So we follow them as closely as possible with a fast Monte Carlo. So this is modified PGS Pythia modifications that we've made in order to validate our models with their benchmark models, our analyses with their benchmark models. I'll show you an example in a minute. We actually do reproduce their results fairly closely, even though we have the fast simulation. And we combine the various analysis signal regions, as Atlas does, into, you know, N-jets, zero leptons, multi-jets, N-jets, one lepton, and so forth. And we'll quote the coverage for each of these as a combined result. This is very CPU intensive. We've basically taken one century core of CPU to do this. And as of now, we've covered all of the Atlas searches that were public as of mid-September. So the new stuff that they announced at HPC, we haven't included, but we've got all of the searches that they were publicly available as of mid-September. So this is our validation of our analysis results. This is just number of events as a function of M effective, and this is JETS plus MET. The standard model background is shown in gray. One of us is blue and one of us is green. So Atlas is green and we're blue. And so you see for some bins we're a little bit higher, and other bins the Atlas is a little bit higher, but basically it's extremely good agreement between our analysis procedure and that of Atlas.
Some other validation
of similarity. We have like 5,000 plots.
Exactly. Yeah, this is just one. Right? Yeah. So this is something that we really worked with Atlas on, asking for them to give as many benchmark models as possible, because when they first came out with their analyses, they had like one benchmark model. And we said, no, we're going to follow you and validate our procedure. We need as many benchmark models as possible. And as Tom said, now there's like 5,000, and we've actually checked them all.
So my question is, are you using PGS simulation?
Right.
I don't know how much you need, but the
program. Actually, quite a bit. Matthew has rewritten entire sections of PGS.
Okay.
Yeah. He's going to make it publicly available, actually, when we're all done. And so these are the results. So this is the Neutralino model set, right? And here's all of the different types of analyses. So JETS plus MET, one lepton plus JET, same sign dileptons, the third generation searches, multi-leptons. This is heavy stable charge particles. We've done disappearing tracks. We've included, just ignore the non-MET based searches for now. And this is the fractions of models that are excluded from the 70 EV data, the 80 EV, and then an extrapolation that we did for 25 inverse femtobarns at 80 EV. When you sum everything up, the remodels that remain after the Atlas searches is basically 66% of our model set are still viable after all of these Atlas searches have been applied. So a couple of interesting points as you sit and stare at this table is that the certs with JETS plus leptons don't buy you very much. This is very different from the constrained MSSM, where you're always going down through the second lightest neutralino, so you get a slepton and lepton in the final state. We have about 1% of our models that were excluded by the 70 EV data, but not by the 80 EV data. Okay, so this was an effect of having to have tighter cuts for the 80 EV data in order to constrain the background more, remove the background, improve S over B. And by making these tighter cuts, some of the models can now evade the searches. Okay. Right, so that's the very next thing I was going to say. Okay, that's the other interesting thing about this table is that.
Can I interrupt before we get back down? Because that 1% I find important because I would like to.
They're very important.
That doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
If we ran longer with age, would we eventually exclude these or have we forever cut them out?
I think you forever cut them out. Okay. Because look, as you go longer with eight, you're not getting any better.
Okay. So it sounds like a useful thing for us to do is to conserve some fraction of bandwidth for running 70 EV tables even at eight.
Even at eight.
And try and whittle down that 1%.
Exactly right. Are doing that, yeah.
Sorry, but I thought these 1% are already killed by 70 EV. Why do you want to go back and kill them?
Because there's another 1% that we didn't kill with the 70 EV data. We're not killing with the 80 EV data.
Or as you move to 13 TEV, there's the 1% you didn't kill here that you're not going to kill. That's even worse for 13. Yeah. 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 No, it's 2 to 2 to. This is 2 to 6, and this is like 7, 8, 9. Yeah, right. many jets. Right. Okay. So as Tao noticed, the numbers here are extrapolations for the 8 TeV, 25 inverse femtobarn. It's worse than the actual 8 TeV. This was the basically the 6 inverse femtobarn numbers from 8 TeV, and this is because as what is happening quite a bit with Atlas, the backgrounds are seem to be fluctuating very conveniently, okay, to a little lower than expected, and so they're setting better limits than expected. And when we extrapolated to 25 infrasemptobarns, we took the standard model calculated background. Stefan Hosha did that for us. And so, you know, depending upon how these backgrounds actually fluctuate, these numbers will actually go up or down a little bit, depending on what Atlas actually measures.
So the assumption here is that the number observed if it's equal to background, whereas obviously that's not always
the
case. Yeah. So I probably missed it. So your measure model is a linear step, like when you add the.
Well, it's linear. Yeah, it's linear. Right, except for the gravitino mass. That's. We did, back in 2008, when we did the first study, we compared linear and logarithmic priors, and there was no difference in our results.
Do you actually have similar tables by look at discovery potentials? What was this channel?
Well, no, because exclusions, different statistics in the discovery, no, we didn't do that. We didn't do that. It's easy enough to do, we just didn't do that. Which one? Oh, just ignore B sub S to mu mu right now. I'll show you that in like the next slide or two. Yeah, just ignore these numbers because this was back before it was observed. Okay. We actually have fewer models excluded by that now that it's been observed and from the limit. Yeah. Okay, so it was great. Yeah, right. The upper bound's higher than the limit was. Right, right.
The lower bound
it kills one model, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to say one more thing about this 25 inverse femtobarn column, even though this is just our extrapolation based on calculated standard model backgrounds. Note that you don't gain very much by the increased luminosity. So this is just I mean, even if their backgrounds fluctuated downwards again, this number isn't going to be significantly enhanced. So this is just the statement that we all know, that it's energy, energy, energy when you're doing searches, and more luminosity doesn't really buy you that much in terms of coverage for searches. Okay, and now we have Bisa Bestin Mu Mu. So this is the prediction for our model set. And as you see, these vertical solid line is the standard model prediction. So most of our models actually hit that very closely. The 95% confidence level interval that's excluded are these red bands to the right and the left. And basically, it's 0.8% of the models that are excluded in the neutralino set. So it's 1819 for the neutralino LSP, and 2167 are excluded for the gravitino LSP. So the stories of Susie's demise because of this measurement by LHCb is greatly exaggerated. Not with me. It's pretty flat, right? Because we did 1 through 60 linear. It's pretty flat.
It's around 15, but
it's broad. Yeah. See, Marcella, you come late and you miss the beginning.
Okay.
And because you came late, I'm just going to let you know, see, we cited you. Okay. Right. So it's basically a very mild set of assumptions here, right? Basically, CP conserving, R parity, MFV. First two generations are degenerate, and then no other assumptions. Okay. So this was Bisa Bestin Mu Mu. Did not really have that much of an impact on our model set because most of our guys are hovering around the standard model number. However, the heavy Higgs searches to tau tau are having more of an effect here. So these green and these blue curves are the older curves that were valid when we generated our model set, and you see that we were in compliance with that. But this red, very faint curve is now the new CMS 13 inverse femtobar number, and it's cutting out a fair number of our models. It's about 3,500 for either the Gravitino or the LSP model set. We would very much like the experiments to extrapolate this up to 60 for tan beta, if I can make a request. Okay. So after the LHC searches, what do the distributions of sparticle masses look like in our model set? And of course, this doesn't mean anything overall. This is literally just the distribution of masses in our model set. And this is for the neutralino LSP case. So these are the distributions for the light quarks, the gluinos, and the stop. The curves are color-coded, and the color coding is given here in the bottom corner. It's the top black curve is the full model sample, and then each color curve is the cut that you get once you apply that particular search. So the red curves is when you apply the multi-jets plus MET, the green curves when you apply heavy flavor, multi-leptons. Purple is the stable charged particles disappearing tracks. You can't even read this. It's the non-MET searches. And then this brownish curve at the very bottom is when you look at the subset of models that have 126 plus or minus 3 GeV Higgs. Okay. So we've got just a handful that are hovering around 500. And
we have spots where we just blow up the lower masses.
No, I don't have those because I was trying to cut this down to like 30, 35 slides, so I didn't put in all these plots. But we're gonna look at models at the end that have low fine tuning and have lighter stops. Okay. But as you see, there's just a handful. Our what was that, Marcella?
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the CCS you are putting some cut there because you don't seem to have anything left. No.
Yeah, we assumed it was above the top mass.
You put the cut on top.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, those 500
GEV stops. Right. Yes. We'll see this in a minute. I've got those plots. Yeah. Okay. So the thing that you really want to look at in these plots are shown in these density plots. So this is the lightest squark mass as a, well, no, it's the other way around. I can't read on this screen. This is the Galeno mass, and this is the squark mass. This is the full model set, what we had before the LHC searches were applied. This on the right is after the LHC searches. And you can see the density is small, but we have models here with 400 GeV squarks and 500 GeV galenos. Okay.
So why do those
survive? It's basically compressed spectra. See, they didn't have to cut so tightly. Yeah. So, so there are a handful of models down here at like 500 GeV squarks and galenos. You get up to a TeV, and there's just many. I mean, there's no problem having squarks and galenos less than a TeV once you put in the PMSSM. For the gravity, so these are for the neutralino set. For the gravitino set, some of the LHC work is still running in the computers now. There's some new features that you have to include. For instance, all of the relevant decay modes for the N LSP are not actually included in all of these public codes. So for non-gravitino decays, the NN LSP can actually be rather long-lived. And you have to include the three-body decays for each of these guys. And for Galeno, Stops, and Chargino, NN LSPs, you also need to include the 4 and 5 body decays in order to get the decay lengths in the detector calculated correctly. We had to modify everything. Matthew's a genius at that. And as I said earlier, so we calculated the NLSP relic density with micro-omegas and rescaled to the gravitino mass, and the Big Bang nuclear synthesis constraints were very important here, as well as relic neutrinos and diffuse photons. And I've got some plots in the backup we can look at if we want to. So the percentage of models that are excluded, this is what we have done so far. We've basically got everything for 7 TeV. We're working on fleshing out this table for 8 TeV. Here I've included a column, which I forgot to do for the neutralino case. Anyway, here's a column. If you take our subset of models that have a Higgs in the right mass range, what's the percentage of those models that are excluded by the LHC? And you see here that the heavy stable charge particle searches are very important, basically as important as all of the vanilla MET-based searches. The gauge-mediated a dedicated search, gamma gamma plus MET, plays some role. It's not huge. And basically, the LHC excludes half of the model set. Okay, so this is more than the case with the neutralino LSPs, just because it's easier to get a large MET in these cases where you have a light gravitino, and because of the stable charge particles being so important. No. Some do, some don't. You don't get, yeah, that, yeah, yeah. The typical spectrum you would get in a gauge-mediated model. Some have it, some don't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying only 1% of the models are killed by
the test cut? No. So, this is the subs. This is, we've got four sets of models, right? We've got the full neutralino set, the full gravitino set, and then we have the subset for both neutralino and gravitinos that have 126 GeV Higgs. Okay? And so if you just look at that subset of models, the LHC kills or excludes 27% of those.
I think that's just the statement that
That's precisely what that statement is, and this is a check of that. It's in.
Today.
Yeah. No.
Did you allow that and then it just never happened?
Yeah. That'll come in another couple of slides. Yeah. No. These are, if you take the subset of models that have a Higgs at 126 GeV, this is how many of those models the LHC excludes. That's a very different thing. Yeah. Well, we'll see that literally in two slides. But the last thing I want to say is, even though they're excluding half of our models thus far, we still have over 100,000 models to play with, okay? So our statistical sample isn't really dying there. And now I wanted to get to the Higgs results. So this was a guy that was at IChep that wore his poster. Yeah, he got it, yeah. He enjoyed having his picture taken. He was fine with that. Okay, so here's what everybody was asking about. Here is the distribution for the Higgs mass for the full model set. In all of these curves, neutralino curves, I mean, in all of these plots, the neutralino curves are going to be blue, the gravitinos are going to be red. So here is, we're going to go flip back and forth between 125 plus or minus 2 and 126 plus or minus 3. It doesn't make a lot of difference in our model set, and it depends on where you believe the Higgs might actually be, okay, and what you believe the error is in these codes in generating the masses, which is 2 to 3 GeV. Yeah, so you see that for the gravitino set, it's just a little bit harder to get the 125, 126 GeV Higgs. That's because the stops tend not to be quite as heavy there. Okay. This is just the fraction as of models as you go down. But you see that basically there's no trouble getting models with this Higgs mass. We're in the tens of thousands of models that we've looked at. It's like 40,000 models. We are, over the holiday break, we're going to do a new model scan to focus on this Higgs region and models with low fine-tuning, just to let you know. Okay, so how do you get to a 126 GeV Higgs? This is what everybody already knows, but basically you need large stop mixing, and this just shows that. So this is the off-diagonal element of the stop mixing matrix as a function of the Higgs mass, and so to get out here at 125 GeV, it just needs to be big, and it doesn't matter so much on what the stop mass is, but it's this off-diagonal matrix of the A terms that have to be big. Because you don't have as many of these heavy stops, and you don't have the as many models out here with the large stop mixing. If you sit and think about it, it's because for the gravitino case, the LSP mass can be extremely light, right? So all of the other particle masses will tend to be lighter rather than being pushed towards the heavier end of the spectrum. Whereas for neutralino LSPs, everybody's got to be above the neutralino. In some cases, the neutralino is as high as 2 GeV. This is no. It's not cosmology. It's just the shape is right. It's just the shape of the spectrum given the bias of the LSP mass. Yeah. If the neutralino is. That would be in the gravitino model set. Yeah. We went up to a TeV. It was a typo on the slide. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we went from an EV to a TeV. Yeah. I'm gonna fix that. Exactly right. I've gone everywhere and given this talk, and I haven't noticed that before. One of those things. So what are the properties of this set of models? So this is, now I'm going to look at a bunch of plots that do the usual thing, where it's the ratio of gluon fusion production times the branching fraction to some particular final state, and it's the ratio of this in the PMSSM versus that of the standard model. Okay? So this is for the gamma-gamma final state, for the neutralino model set, and the gravitino model set. All plots from here on out are going to be looking at 125 plus or minus 2, so this region in here. And it's going to be color-coded such that the models that give you R gamma-gamma greater than 1 are blue. R gamma-gamma between a half and 1 will be color-coded in red.
And there's, yeah.
Kind of what they, yep. It's kind of what they see too. It's very interesting. No. I'll show you a plot. In fact, I'll go through the slides in a minute. But once you change the BB bar width, okay, since that's the biggest width, okay, if you make that smaller, because of the non-decoupling, right? Okay, then everybody else goes up. No, we take Atlas because they're down the hall. We took Atlas before anybody knew the Higgs was there.
Right.
Not BB bar.
Yes.
Yeah. And right now they. This is yet to be seen. The error bar is so big in all these couplings, making any conclusions right now is a bit silly, to be honest. So we have 4.5% of our models that have a high R gamma gamma in the neutralino case. Okay. Oh, we'd be in trouble. Yeah, that's up here. Yeah. Maybe in this dedicated scan, right? Because most of our models don't have this Higgs mass. So in our new dedicated scan, maybe we'll get there.
Why is this light spell scenario not part of the scan?
It is part of the scan. We have every mass possible, okay? So here is a plot of the lightest Stau mass as a function of R gamma gamma. And you see we start at 100 GeV for the Staus and go up to 4 TeV, which is our scan range. The Stau, so all of our masses are input at the weak scale, and then we use soft SUSY because suspect has errors.
And a word of caution is that, especially in the region with gamma-gamma enhanced, there's a delta-tau effect that's not included, which is important.
A what?
Delta-tau.
Delta-tau?
Yeah.
Right.
So if you really want to do that, you have to like concentrate in that region, look at it. Yeah,
right.
But I think what is there is that maybe, for example, for the stops, you start looking about after top. After top.
Right.
So for the stops, if I look.
We started at 100.
You started at 100.
Right. I don't know. Tan beta is not on this plot.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I don't
know. In principle, you're going all over
Yeah.
However, this is your whole sample.
Right.
You don't seem to have anything that goes below 1.1.
What Marcella is saying.
When you mean goes below? Oh, right. Yeah, we don't have any gamma that's very high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what Marcella is saying is not because you can't do it. It's because of your scan.
It's our scan, right? And as I said. And this sample was made before we knew the Higgs was 126, so we didn't even. That's why we're doing a new dedicated scan.
What you're trying to say is that we should be careful interpreting these as not saying that you can't get to.
It's nothing you can't get to. That's exactly right. I think the point in showing this plot is that you don't need to have a light style mass in order to get an enhanced gamma.
Unless you want to go to
1.8. I don't know. I don't even know if that's true. I'm not going to stand here and make that statement because I don't think, we don't know if that's true.
So you have R gamma, but as I think Daniel was saying, I understand that this gamma is mainly coming from the universe separation.
Right.
So you will have the same type of enhancement for ZZ.
So these are the plots that I skipped over to show you the tau tau. Okay. So here are these, this is just the distribution now for the various final states. It's gamma again, ZZ, vector boson fusion, tau tau, gamma Z. These are all from the neutralino case. The two curves are before and after the LHC searches are applied. So you can see the LHC searches are not having too much of an effect on these various ratios. And you see that the range of values is quite large. What is perhaps more interesting are the correlations. Okay. So again, this is ZZ, vector boson fusion, tau tau, BB, gamma Z. And you see that everybody is correlated in the same direction except for BB bar, as we were just discussing. And we also have this little nose or something coming out. Yeah, right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Gamma is on the horizontal axis for everybody. Yeah. Okay. And it's the same color coding as before, right? Blue is gamma above 1. No, we don't get a correlation between the two. And this is due to Howie, basically, right? And his how the decoupling is actually very slow for the BB bar case when you have large spottom mixing. And so this is why you have the special corrections to the BB bar final state.
Yeah, that's what we
are going right.
To
yeah. So right.
Right.
Well, I think that's why you're getting this little nose out here.
Yeah. So
yeah. I mean, that's what this is, right?
Yeah. You know,
right. Right.
And we look at this BB and tau tau, and we just show where you can have no correlation exactly for this delta V corrections that Carl was mentioning. But still, okay, there are some regions from the space where you are touching alpha or alpha effective mixing in the Higgs sector. And so you will be coming, I think, together. So I need to understand these two plots because there is not the way I would expect it. On the other side, yes.
Yeah.
The tau totally off with the B.
Yeah, the tau is still correlated in the same way as everybody else. Right.
And so, which is perfect,
right?
But this is all delta V.
Right.
Yeah, it's all delta V.
Which is.
No, it's correlation.
And Delta Tau is smaller, right.
Correction to help affect whatever it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is, they will, therefore, the correction will affect it as you will know, touch Tau and least equally. And then you will achieve.
One's alpha S and one's alpha. Tau is going to be smaller. One's alpha S, and tau going to be smaller. Tau corrections. I know, but the size of the corrections should be smaller. I mean, alpha should, tau should be smaller. It's also the vertex, right.
It's the vertex correction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The correction is going to shift
to
some tau.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, in different amounts. The result.
Now, you can say that the codes need to be updated, but that's another issue.
Yeah, the fact that you don't have the tau is a different issue. But I have to think about it because it would be possible.
Yeah. Okay, and this is just the statement that we've already discussed. Okay, and this plot over here shows very explicitly. As you get to the large mixing in the B-squark matrix, that you are having a very large effect on the width of the B. Okay. Invisible Higgs decays. I don't want to go through all these words, but basically we have like 35, 50 models in these two sets that have large invisible decays. So we have one case where the branching fractions are 10. We have 15 in the neutralino set and 36 in the gravitino set that have an invisible branching fraction bigger than 10%. And in one case, it's 50%. Okay, so this is just a plot. So this is the logarithm of the invisible branching fraction of the Higgs, just the distribution. And you see here's this model that we are indeed at 50%. All right, naturalness. So I'm close to being finished. Yeah. So in order to look at fine-tuning, we just applied the standard naturalness criteria of Barbieri and Guduce, and we do this to next to leading order for everything. These are the terms which give the dominant contributions to fine-tuning for the neutralino and the gravitino set. In both cases, you see that it's the mu parameter, so Higgsino is having the largest effect here in terms of fine-tuning. The stop parameters here are the next largest contributor, but subdominant to the mu parameter in terms of continuing fine-tuning. Here's the degree of fine-tuning in our models. This delta is the usual parameter we're used to. The green and the purple are the full model sets. The red and the blue are the model sets with 126 GeV Higgs. Blue is neutralino, red is gravitino. And you see that we have a handful of models that have fine-tuning around 1 to 2%. So not as great as you would like, but not completely as unreasonable as this set of models over here. So if we look at how many models we have here with delta less than 100. In the gravitino model set, there's only one. It is killed by the LHC. In the neutralino set, we had 13, four of which are killed by the LHC. So after the LHC searches, we are left with 9 neutralino LS models that have fine-tuning of roughly 1%. Now, if you wanted to change this criteria of 100, because this is kind of arbitrary, to 120, then you start opening things up, and we've got like 50 to 100 models. Okay. We've looked at the spectra for these models, and this is a sample. So this is model 1,584,662. And all of the spectra for these models with low fine-tuning tend to have similar characteristics. Namely, you have a suite of light gauginos, which tend to be Higgsino-like. So here we've got 3 neutralinos, and both chargenos are very light and somewhat degenerate down here. We have stop and spottom very close in mass, and again, rather light. This is around 600 GeV. And as you go through these nine models that have low fine tuning, the galenos, the quarks, and the leptons tend to be all over the map. Okay, so there's nothing special about those masses. So this is model number one. And then just to show you, we actually, the spectra for all of them, they all have this feature of this suite of light gay genos down here.
What was the nature of 5-4 in these models?
The nature of what?
5-4.
Mostly genos. So this is.
Yeah, and you see here it is.
It's significantly larger than M2 and M2.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we did. Yeah. And so you might ask, why haven't we seen stops of 600 GeV? And it's because the searches basically look for a 100% branching fraction into a particular final state. And since we have this entire suite of gay genos lighter than the stop, the decay chains of the stops are now very complicated. So that's what this graph tries to show. So if you start with your 600 GeV stop, it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different decay paths. It can go to a top plus the third neutralino with 18% branching fraction, or it can go all the way down to the LSP and the stop on the top with 17% branching fraction. The thing to note is that for each of its five decay chains, it has basically roughly equal branching fractions along the way. And then, of course, these guys cascade down. And so you have, basically, you have to do a multi-channel, combined multi-channel search for stops. And the experiments are doing this now. Both CMS and Atlas have our 9 points. And they're working very hard to develop a search that combines all of these channels in order to see these models.
So just out of curiosity, I would have expected our same time left that search to kill this model. Is it just because the production rate is too low to appreciably affect that?
Must be. Although anything with Z's in. Yeah. So here's like a 59% with a Z. There's a lot of W's. Yeah.
We had models like Joey mentioned it before. Mm-hmm. Right. Those are the ones with, if I'm correct, the stop masses that ended up to be about 400 and 600. And in fact, those circuits
right.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy in quotes, yeah. Right.
Heavier than the ones we killed.
Right.
It means mm-hmm. you're basically running out of range for these very inclusive searches to go after.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We haven't done the 18.
Exactly. Because they just came out. Yeah.
So maybe that this kills them.
We don't know.
Well, yeah. We don't have, but we might, is imagine same time lockdowns plus B decay.
Yeah. Right. That would be good.
Model, yeah. And that category of search seems to be.
That would be good because look at all these bees sitting here with the Chargino decays. Yeah. That would be a good one. And likewise, this is just the bees quark decays in this model. My last slide is what's the effect on direct detection of dark matter? So this is just the spin independent cross section. Scaled to the amount of relic density that particular model is responsible for. This is the full model set. This is the model set with the LHC searches. And this is what you have once you apply the Higgs mass constraints, very faint. So this blue line is what you expect from the one-ton xenon experiment. And this is where we are now at the xenon 100. And you see that basically the shape, so this is the original blob, the shape of this original blob for the spin-independent cross-section doesn't change, okay? It's just that we have lower statistics with the model set with the 126 GeV Higgs, but the shape of the blob doesn't change, okay? Which is nice because it really shows the complementarity of the different ways of searching for dark matter. And we are in the process of looking at, we've already looked at Fermi and IceCube for this model set. We're in the process of looking at the sensitivity of CTA. So for snow mass, we'll have a full range of complementarities for all the various dark matter searches. Okay, so conclusion. So it's relatively easy to accommodate the heavier Higgs in the PMSSM. It selects a region of large stop mixing. The branching fractions are correlated. The lower BB is predicted. Lower tau tau is difficult, as we saw. Reasonable fine-tuning at the level of 1% is possible. It selects a region of parameter space that's actually consistent, where you have a light-ish stop and spottom and a very light and compressed electroweak Eno sector, which is, I have to say, it's tailor-made for the linear collider. future plans, as I've said, we're going to work on over the holiday break of generating a new set of points that's focused on the Higgs mass, just so that we have a larger statistical sample for that, plus low fine-tuning. And we are working with the working groups in the energy frontier and the cosmic frontier to select benchmark points to be studied at SNOMASS. And right now there's 24 models that are chosen that have all the different annihilation properties that you can think of for dark matter.